We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Arteta! What a screamer! What a screamer! Zola! What a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Phenomenal and impactful halftime substitution rescues chance at the tie for Arsenal. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, you can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right, it wasn't going well. But a phenomenal, an influential halftime substitution turned the tie. Sadly, it was not made by our coach, but you'll take it where you can get it. Unai Emery'd the shit out of that one, didn't he? Took off a striker, brought on Francis Coquelin. The rest, as they say, is history. And Arsenal now go from what would have been pretty grim chances to progress to what the 538 has as 38% odds. And 38% odds, given how that game started, is something you would probably take. I think it is the tricky situation that we have to accept. We are very much in this tie while also not necessarily feeling like we're in a generous mood where we want to forgive what was going on in that game. A game where I don't think Villarreal were any good, by the way. And maybe some parallels to the Slavia Prague tie. A team that didn't look very good. We didn't set up particularly well. We blew an opportunity in the first leg, left ourselves a lot of work to do. But if they are equally bad in the second leg and we fix our mistakes, it could feel very much like that tie at the end of two legs. And I would take that opportunity, especially with United looking there for the taking after just a meager 6-2 win over Roma. So all good things. I did interview Alex Kirkland from the Spanish Football Podcast. That interview will be in the Monday podcast, looking ahead, talking about things from a Spanish perspective. So, Emery's moves, the tie generally, how they're viewing Arteta, how they're viewing Thomas Partey's move to Arsenal, things like that. You can catch that on Patreon now if you want. So it's up on Patreon, as is our instant reaction. But if you want to wait for it, of course, please feel free to do so. It'll be available on Monday. So Tim's on Twitter at Stroberto. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
Clive's on Twitter at ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
Okay, let's waste no time getting right into it, Clive. There are people that love Mikel Arteta. There are people that don't necessarily feel that way, for lack of a less diplomatic way to put it. This is it. This is the whole ball of wax. We have to get to this European final and then find some way to win it. And going into this game, I think you'd have to say the problem for Arsenal and Arteta right now, and we've talked about this a lot, is you really wouldn't like to be going into a European semifinal still not knowing what your best system is, what your best lineup is, and then having some injuries that complicated a little further. But I think even with the options he had available, it's very safe to say that Arteta went a bit of galaxy brain here. And the irony is, in a week where Arteta maybe prevented himself from going galaxy brain in the semifinal for once, Arteta picked up the mantle and ran with it. Is this just a case of Mikel overthinking a big moment, getting it wrong, and then unfortunately being slow to change it?
I think there are some... Hey, look, I don't see the game the same as either you two guys. I'm sure I don't see the game the same as Mikel Arteta. So I have thoughts in my mind about what a team should look like. And I'm very much a structure guy, really, a solidity guy. So when I see instability, when I see that, I really dive on it. Because particularly if that instability is in positions where I feel you need stability. Right? So that will probably explain some of my views and some of our players, as you know me well enough. And I look at a game, I think, okay, game for your life, what do you do? Game for your life, okay, I need to have a look at them. They need to look at me. I'm going to make sure I have certain pillars in place that allow me to look at the game, to see how the game is flowing. And from there, we can do our thing. If I have my structure in place, all of my pretty players can do their pretty stuff on the football. And they can focus on that. They can be in positions to do that. And we can have a much better team structure and connectivity. That's how I look at the game. Right? So when I see certain players on the pitch affecting other players' ability to play, destroying relationships, destroying connections, destroying wide triangles and diamonds, which we saw none of that last night, then you got to say to yourself, that's on me. That's on me, the coach. I put this out there and it's not there. It's not working. And again, I mean, Tim said last night, and I totally agree, things go wrong in the game. And I'm sure we get onto it, and I don't want to take it all now, but things go wrong in the game. But it's always about your ability to see it, to change it, to message it to your players, to squeeze the game, do whatever you got to do, hold back on your original plan while you see out some dark moments. Do whatever you do in a two-legged European tie not to separate away from the opposition by two clear goals, which we did last night. And that sort of in-game inexperience is really costing us, you know. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys remember the Emery 1 pod. Remember that one?
My all-time best moment in podcasting. Yes, I do.
And you guys were very strong on Arteta, and I was a little bit like, I'd wait and see. And one of the things I said at the time was, I remember this clearly, there was a time when Pep was suspended from a European game and Arteta had to take the management job. And I think it was a European game, they lost actually. It was a group game. I looked at the feedback on it and they said, he looked like a rabbit in the headlights when it came to substitutions. And he was a young assistant coach, probably 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was. And it always stayed in my mind. And I remember saying to you guys, you know, we don't know what he's like, he never made a sub, blah, blah, blah. And it's been something that's been consistently wrong, his inability to make changes at the appropriate time, in my opinion. However, drinks break Arsenal, smashed that to me completely, because he was so, so reactive and proactive. But we got some inexperience here, and I said this last night, we look inexperienced as a club. Everywhere you look, we look inexperienced. And I hate when people like Patrice Evra say, Arsenal is a finishing school. And I just don't like it. So there's always a bit of hint of truth in feedback. And that stayed in my mind. And I don't want us to be a finishing school, top to bottom. Finishing school for execs, finishing school for coaches, and finishing school for players. Because that's not the expectations of most Arsenal fans in the European Cup semi-final.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, look, people would say, well, you hired a coach into his first job. What do you expect? Well, I think it's fair to say, first of all, the club didn't support him well because they put him into a structure where he had nothing surrounding him. I mean, you know, when I taught my daughter to ride her bike, she got on a little bike with training wheels, and that's how she rode first. And then you take the training wheels off, and then you get a bigger bike. You don't put her on a rocket cycle. But Mikel Arteta takes over a big club, and oh, by the way, we're going to fire the director of football, or, you know, whatever the heck his title was, executive director of grifting, and we're going to fire the chief scout, and we're going to replace him with inexperienced guys, and we're going to call you manager, and now you have all the jobs, and oh, by the way, try to handle this wage cut we're proposing, and try to handle this pandemic, and try to, I mean, yes, there's a lot of excuses, but at the end of the day, explanations for failure are still failure. So this was a case where I just felt that Arteta went into a big moment and froze a bit. And I mean, Tim, there's a few things we can fixate on here. I think the obvious two big things that he chose to keep Xhaka at left back, and he chose to go strikerless. Both of those decisions paid dividends for Emery and Villarreal, in my view. I am always inclined to be more concerned about what happened at the attacking end. It's hard when you're 2-0 down at halftime to say the attacking end is the problem, but it's the 0.14 expected goals at halftime. You know, the nothing we're creating that also emboldens the opposition. And I don't think Villarreal particularly banged down our door. Their second goal is just schoolyard Sunday league defending on a set piece. First one's maybe a little unlucky. But of the two, the Shaq at left back and the going strikerless, for me, I see the decision to use Smith Rowe the way he did as the bigger failure that impacted this tie. Do you have a different take or see it similarly?
No, I see it similarly. I think I tweeted during the game, like a good false nine or strikerless formation has lots of people rotating the number nine role. A bad false nine strikerless formation has nobody in that role. You need someone there. So it's perfectly fine to play without a recognized striker, so long as there is someone always filling that space. And then it just comes down to how good they are at doing it. So like Spain, Euro 2012, I think one of the few teams that have ever been successful with a false nine. Didn't actually score that many goals in that tournament, but what their false nine did, their false nine was usually Fabregas, or I think it was David Silva once. And what those guys do is they keep the ball for you. So what Spain did in Euro 2012, I think they scored 8 goals or something, maybe 9 en route to winning it. I think they won all their knockout games 1-0 in the build-up to the final, because it was like, well, we only need to score once because even our centre forward is Cesc Fabregas, so you're not getting the ball off us. And so that's like a really extreme example of where it can work, where all of your kind of forwards and midfielders are such brilliant technicians that you're just not getting the ball back. And therefore, it doesn't really matter how many times you shoot, as long as you shoot once into the goal and that's it, because then the other team's not getting the ball. We don't have that level of player. Very few teams have that level of player. Man City doing it recently. But Man City, and this, weirdly enough, I've always said I don't like watching Man City. This is the first time under Pep I've actually enjoyed watching Man City in this strikerless formation. And the reason is because you don't know who's going to pop up in that number nine spot. And that's what's kind of quite thrilling about it. But there is always someone in it. And, you know, you've got a forward like Raheem Sterling who takes up those central positions anyway. And it really, really works for them. And also, yeah, they have brilliant technicians. So, again, if you have Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva as a false nine, they might not, you know, spin a defender and smash it in the top corner, but they'll keep the ball and you'll keep the team under pressure. We asked Emile Smith-Rowe to do that last night, and I was tempted on the instant reaction pod to give him a stock rising, not because I thought he played particularly well, I thought he struggled with that role, but because the manager trusted him to do that and because the manager wanted him in the team so much that he gave him that role. And that is a kind of, that is, yeah, that's a stock rising. But, my, you know, I said it before kickoff, I was worried with this formation. Who is it that's going to go it? Because Smith Rowe's going to come out. Of course he is. He's probably going to be asked to come out. So who's going to go in? And that's where, even if you don't play Martinelli as a number nine, for me, you've got to have aggressive wide players if you're going to play that kind of system, much like we did, you know, against Sheffield United with Lacazette. Lacazette played a bit like a false nine, but we had Pepe and Martinelli kind of going in behind and beyond. That's what you want when you play a false nine. You need those aggressive wide players running in behind. And we didn't have that either. Well, we had one of them, I think, in Pepe. And I think Pepe got a lot of change out of Villarreal down that side, but it was just down one side. And Saka's not really that running behind player. He's more of a dribbling behind player, which obviously actually gets us a goal in the end. But it just wasn't configured correctly at all. And I really, really never thought it would be. I'm not sure if that's I feel like it's a semantic argument and probably doesn't matter. I feel like overthinking is something we're putting on Arteta because Pep's done it a few times, and maybe it's just a synonym for he got it wrong.
Yeah, fair point.
maybe he didn't think about it enough. quite frankly. But yeah, I was always, what, like, I wouldn't have minded Smith Rowe as a false nine if one of the wingers is Martinelli and he's the one running in behind and filling that number nine space. You have to have, so you cannot play without someone in that space. You can rotate the individual who's in that space. You cannot have nobody there. You can keep the ball all you want and you can play all the triangles you want and the one touch football you want. You have to have someone at the point who's offering that threat, or at least running in behind, or at least, you know, pulling defenders out of the way. And that was why I was very worried before kickoff, because I just didn't see how or who was going to do that.
Yeah, Aubameyang did it in 6 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, and the reason I'll call it overthinking is because, you know, I think on the Arscast they said it was more like arrogance or egotistical. You've got Pepe, who can maybe do it. He can hold up. He can run in behind. He can sort of do it. You got Martinelli, who can definitely do it. You could try Aubameyang from the start, and if he's not up to it, you take him. No, I'm going to use Emil Smith Rowe as false nine in a weird hybrid situation where I've got a central midfielder at left back, and I'm going to keep him exposed because I'm going to push those wide players, Saka and Pepe, really wide. And I've got this exotic system that's a tweak on an already exotic system that I'm going to roll out in the first leg of a European semifinal. That is quintessential overthinking to me, because there are many more obvious ways he could have set this team up in the absence of the players that weren't available. And I do have to say, you know, I was pretty vocal in thinking like the Cedric deal was stupid, for example. What are we doing signing a guy who didn't play on loan, who's in his, you know, in his late prime to be a backup to a backup at right back? And here we are now at the pointy end of the season, a very experienced Portuguese international player that we signed from a reasonable Premier League team who can't get into the team at left back, so much so that Xhaka is there. It's a worry. It's all of the things. It's recruitment, it's selection, it's tactics. But Clive, I'd love to go deeper on your thoughts about this sort of false nine system, because the one thing I will say is, you know, maybe the theory is Odegaard and Smith Rowe are exchanging lots of passes and Smith Rowe is sliding in Saka and Pepe running in behind. But the way it played out, Smith Rowe had no key passes, one shot and one pass into the box. There was never the connectivity between him and the runners. So that just never materialized.
Yeah, and it's just, I really want you guys to hold me to account here. Really. So,
I'm worried. Do you mean that, really?
Yeah. Well, you guys immediately go to Smith Rowe being an issue, right? So, my issue for me was Xhaka playing at the back and not being in midfield.
That is a big issue as well. Yeah.
To me, that's the bigger issue, because you said it there. No key passes, no connections. We didn't even get to that space. We didn't even build up to that area. Like, we weren't there. Our inaccuracy in our build-up turned the game in transition game, or we give it back to them, and they were able to get out of the press and run through us. So for me, the bigger issue was our lack of control in central midfield areas, because we had one person in there. As soon as he was moved, it was over. It was over because there was nobody else to really affect that area and to tackle and to block, because we couldn't catch them. You see what I mean? And so what happens then is, when you play a false nine system, think about this, right, lads, for a moment. The key to Man City's false nine system really is their back three, Walker, Stones, Diaz, because they play high and they smash everything and they turn it back with Rodri in front. So what you're doing, you're playing a midfielder's game in a much smaller space. What do we see in this game? You saw everybody running backwards. Everyone running away, big space, because we were bypassed, sucked in, bypassed. It doesn't matter about your false nine now. Now you're playing a midfield defence game. Your defence is no longer stable. It's not standing high. It's running away because the midfield is bypassed. They look ahead. They see green space. They can't press. There's no bad touches coming. People running at them. They've got a jockey hope someone can catch and make a double up tackle. That's what they've got to hope for. So let's not talk about, I know the issue with centre forward is a valid question, but trust me, we were outpassed, outcoached, outmaneuvered. They played around us and they played into our weakness. A number of times we overcompensated on one side, they switched out the other side. It's a running race to get out to Foyth's side quickly. Pepe's pressing decisions were poor. He kept trying to get the centre back. He needed to make sure the fullback was covered. There was a couple of bad decisions off the ball. Off the ball, we were shocking. So we didn't get to see the passing false nine game that Man City do, because our back line was unstable. Mm. Our centre midfield was unstable. So we never saw the front four. And everything we did in this game was not what we normally see, where you have connectivity on both sides. It was all individual. And so I get what you're saying. It'd be nice to have a centre forward to go and do stuff. It'd be lovely. If he was fit, he'd be playing. Different discussion. We play three in behind rather than double tens, whatever it is. But I do feel the instability in centre midfield was the reason for this fractured performance. In my mind, that's my priority over the fact that we use Smith Rowe in the Lacazette role, which is a setting role, not an Aubameyang role, the Lacazette role. Before the podcast, I asked you to pass me the pass map. That looks all right, doesn't it? That pass map looks really good. But we saw the game. But what didn't work? Players in the wrong places, with the wrong attributes, not enough of the ball to create the connections that we wanted to see until they dropped away and we played in their half. And then suddenly we looked like Arsenal.
Yeah, and I mean, I take your point, because the Ceballos conversation is a big one that we're going to have. And I would just say that the thing with Lacazette is I've never really liked the Lacazette role, except in the games where he did the other stuff, made it into the box, right? The West Ham game where he got in and he had chances and he scored goals, right? There have been games where he did the other stuff. The games I didn't like is where the Lacazette role was more 10 than 9.5 and he doesn't get back in there. I also think you're right. It was more double tens than a false nine. And I think that pushed Saka and Pepe wider. I really do think at times this had a 4-2-4 shape to it. And it gave, you take Ceballos, who's made error after error in the Europa League that have cost us, and you put him in a position in the semifinal where he has massive responsibility. He had about the same number of touches and passes as Thomas Partey in this game. And that can't be right. You know, in all the positions, deep, right, left, forward, carrying the ball. I actually think Partey struggled a bit. And when Ceballos went off, I thought Partey got better and started to really dominate the game, which tells you all you need to know.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that was?
Because he doesn't have a guy running to come get the ball and take it off the back line and occupying all the spaces that he needs to go into. And, you know, position is important. You know, the reality is, if you want to have a progressive pass between the lines, someone's got to be standing there. And if they're just running to wherever the ball is every time, that's all out the window. Or not. Do you have a different perspective?
No, I agree. I just thought Smith Rowe stood next to Partey and that was it. That's all he needed was someone near him. Mm. I don't think it's complicated. Partey was brilliant with Saka next to him. Smith Rowe just said, you know what, a bit of energy. I'm staying in here. Distance with my 4-4-1. Straight line. Let's support my wide men. Let's make sure when they turn around, I can be there for the set. Yep. Nothing more than that. Tuck back in next to my centre midfield partner. Good luck trying to run through us. We're going to control the ball. It's not hard. It really isn't. Smith Rowe is such a smart player. I really, really rate him. He can do a lot of stuff. He needs to be trusted more in a deeper role. He can do it. I really believe he can do it.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, Thomas Partey, it's funny because I thought he was having a pretty mediocre game, and then you go and you dig into the stats, and it's 11 ball recoveries by far the most, and the most progressive passes, and the most final third entries, along with Xhaka, who somehow manages to dominate that statistic even when he's playing 5 yards off his own end line. I do think, though, before we get more into a Ceballos discussion, Tim, we probably should discuss defending a little bit, because even though it's not where my brain goes when I see us produce 0.14 expected goals and a half, we were 2-0 down. And you don't get 2-0 down by what your attackers are doing necessarily, although that plays a role. I think that Unai Emery has always loved to overload wide spaces, half spaces. I mean, think about Arsenal. When he was the coach of Arsenal, the middle of the pitch was lava. I actually think that was the title of one of our pods. The middle of the pitch is lava. You know he's going to move his midfielders into the half space and have his fullbacks overload his wingers. And he's going to try to dominate the half spaces and either have them dribble by a guy or cross it. And yet, by virtue of the system we had with the four up top and Xhaka sitting really deep, there was a lot of grass in the middle of the pitch in those half spaces and wings for them to pretty easily progress the ball. And I think they had talked about it pre-match because the move that leads to their opening goal includes a blind reverse pass, right? Playing out from the back, from the center out to the wing, where you just know a player's going to be. And I think it's because they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring the ball. We're going to play into out. We're going to play central and then go out to the wings where there's going to be space in front of Xhaka. So I have issues all over the place here. I think his decision to play Shaq at left back again not only forces us to have a guy like Ceballos in a more prominent role, which hurt us, it forces us to have Shaq in a role that he's not as comfortable with defensively, and means our spacing is bad because he drops deeper. I also think he got it wrong picking Marie and Holding. And I think this is the problem with a coach who maybe can't just decide who the good players are and stick with them, but is still trying to figure it out this late in the season. Of the things that happened defensively, let's break them down by goal. For their first goal, is it a structure goal? Is it individual responsibility goal? How much of it is on Shaq at fullback? How do you apportion, I hate to say blame, but the causation for that first goal?
So I would urge you to watch the angle of the goal from behind. From behind. So as if the camera was on the halfway line. Obviously, it's not actually on the halfway line. But looking... I didn't describe that very well. Because,
looking at it from the Villarreal goal side or looking at it from behind our goal? Yes. From the Villarreal goal side. Okay,
got it. Exactly.
Behind the play.
When you watch that, you can see clearly what's happened. Because Xhaka is there and Ceballos is there as well. And Ceballos has clearly been told, you know, you can tell, and like rightly, but you can tell they've been told, is it Chukwueze?
Chukwueze, yep. That may not be the right pronunciation, but that is the person.
I wasn't sure on the pronunciation. But they've been told, right, when he gets the ball, I don't want Xhaka isolated. I want two of you there. So Ceballos is there. But what happens when you see that angle, you can see the fear in both of their faces. And you can see that they've been through this and they've gone, oh, no, this is the thing we're worried about that we didn't want to happen. And I think what happens is between Xhaka and Ceballos, there just isn't that unspoken understanding about who's actually going to go out and meet him. So what they do is they both back off because they're. And I think actually Xhaka is probably right to back off. I think, obviously, I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine that, you know, if I was the coach, I'd say, all right, Xhaka, don't you go out and meet him first, because if he gets behind you, then that's it. Ceballos, you go and meet him, and if he gets past you, then Xhaka's there to sweep up. That's generally the principle. And I think Xhaka backs off, expecting Ceballos to go and meet him, only to find that Ceballos is backing off even faster than Xhaka is. And I think there's just a real, and it's because it happens in the first couple of minutes of the game, there's just a real misunderstanding there about who's supposed to go and engage him. And neither of them end up engaging him, and then the shot goes. And I think, to be fair, that kind of thing probably happens quite a lot. It's just it doesn't end up in a goal. Mm-hmm. And it happens, and then you talk to each other, and you go, right, next time. I mean, don't get me wrong, you should have it sorted before, but you go, okay, right, we know what to do next time that happens. Next time you go into him, and I'll back off, kind of thing. But it ended in a goal. So it feels like a lot more dramatic. I think what happened there afterwards, I think Xhaka started doing that. Xhaka learned from that, and I think he grew into it after that, and I think he won quite a lot of tackles. I think he
took the ball off Chukwueze a couple of times. I mean, all credit to him. In the duels from then on, he was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think he worked out, okay, Ceballos isn't going to go and smash into him for me, so I've got to do it. And I think he sorted it out from that stage. And so I feel for him, because I think other than that, his performance was decent. My problem with him being at left back was that we didn't have him in midfield, where we probably need him the most, which is probably a Ceballos conversation as well. With that goal, and then you've got Mari doing much the same thing, like really, really backing off. And perhaps this is just my preconceived bias. I would put quite a lot of that first goal on Ceballos, just really, really backing off. I really don't think, I'd be really surprised if that was what he was asked to do, because your defenders, it's kind of fine for your defenders to think, shit, I've got to defend the 18-yard area. Your midfielder shouldn't be thinking that. And then the second goal, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around, I think, on that one. I think Holding gets a little bit stuck under the ball. Partey switches off. Mari switches off. It's just a really, really poor goal to concede. And again, Villarreal don't have to do much for their two goals. We do not make them work hard for those two goals. And that is principally on, if not the defense, the defending.
Yeah, and I will say this. I thought Mari had a bit of a nightmare. Mari had a mare. I don't know. That didn't work. We'll fix it in post. But I think this is another case. This is a low-key case of Arteta overthinking. You cannot run a football club where your appraisal of your talent is on a rolling 14-day basis. Gabriel has not been great, but he is better than Pablo Mari. He just is. And I know I've never been a Pablo Mari guy, so people might be screaming agenda. You can't be doing this. You can't go into a semifinal and you're picking your center backs based on 14 days of performance. It just shouldn't work like that. I don't know that Holding should be playing, but we don't have a right-sided center back because William Saliba is clearly not nearly as good as Rob Holding or Pablo Mari or Gabriel by all evidence of what we've been seeing. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. I don't think it should have been Mari. And I think if it's not Mari, I think we're one or two goals better in this tie. I think it's that simple. Granit Xhaka's problem is, look at his average positioning. He's so deep. He either knows he can't run the line, so he's staying deeper so he doesn't get run, or he's been told to stay deeper. But when you are off out of possession, and Clive does this so well, he talks about off the ball, you make it so much easier on the opposition to play out and get around your pressure and move the ball up the pitch when the fullback can't get up the pitch because that space is there. Xhaka needs to be 10 yards higher up the pitch to keep that shape and keep that pressure, but he can't be there because he'll get run. And that's part of the problem with not having a real fullback, an athlete there. So that's not Shaka's fault because Xhaka is a midfielder. He is not a fullback. And it all flows from there for me. Yeah, Clive, I was about to turn it over to you, so why don't you just go? Sorry.
Is it about athleticism? You're absolutely right. I mean, what we asked Ceballos to do is what we asked Maitland-Niles to do towards the FA Cup final win. Right? We want him to support the wide areas, but recover back. And of course, he can do it, right? He can run like the wind. And he must be watching it on his set, laughing, watching Ceballos running back. But actually, I did have a look at this goal today, and Tim absolutely nailed it there. But just there was an issue beforehand, and it's one of my favourite players, actually. I think what happened is you have a single Villarreal player in what I call the T position, central, around zone 14-ish. They normally play out to that player, and normally whipped it around the corner. What happened, a second player runs in and stands next to that guy on the tee, and Ceballos says, I'm going in there. I fancy a press. Right? Because when you're somebody that's not very athletic, sometimes you put yourself in areas where you know you can't be blamed because you can't get back. Do you know what I mean? And he goes in. At that moment, Pepe then goes to press the other centre-half. He should have stayed at the fullback. And that's when they whipped it out to the fullback. So now Ceballos is thinking, shit. I've left 30 yards behind me. I've now got to run in front of national TV across Europe. And it didn't look pretty. And from that moment on, Tim's nailed it. But the decision was who to press. The decision was all about who to go and get. Early in the game, look at the game. Don't overcommit. Look at the game. They want you. Look at their pattern. Have a look at what they do, what they want to do. Just suss them out. Then go. Then gamble because you've seen it. You've seen their pattern playing. We just went. And by the way, on the goal, I think it was the second time Ceballos got run. I think it happened earlier in the game. They scored on 4 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So there was a message here. We were all over the place. Absolutely all over the place off the ball. And I don't know why. I'm generally, we were talking today offline, and I'm perplexed at the stress levels in that first half. People like Mari, like Holding, just looked stressed. Chambers, stressed. Ceballos, loose. Partey looking around, trying to find the passes, not always finding them. You know, it was Odegaard didn't look fit to me. Mm. I mean, it's just too many Smith-Rowe not in the right position so he can influence the game. He left to the two wingers and our goalkeeper to bail us out. That's what it was. It was a misuse of resources for too long.
Can I make a point about this too? Like, and I brought this up on the Instant Reaction Pod, but we got to watch some Champions League this week, the obvious curtain riser for the big Europa League ties. You watch those teams and the quality of those teams, and they can make it really difficult for you to execute your game plan. Manchester City are the best team in England, and PSG had the talent to make it difficult for them for a half, but that's all they could do because eventually City's football took over. this wasn't a case of Villarreal making it difficult for us or Villarreal being so good that we had a half of football that we couldn't get into our stride. I thought they were bad throughout. I really did. I mean, they looked kind of like what I expect a mid-table La Liga team to look like. There's a little bit of talent there. There's nothing to be scared of. So I don't, you know, there are times when we overly blame our own team for being bad. I thought we were dreadful against Liverpool. I know some people felt we have no right to expect to be any better against Liverpool. It's an argument for another time. But this wasn't that. This was being bad against a bad team, in my view. We are going to have to do a pretty big discussion of what happened with Ceballos here. But before we do, Tim, I just want to ask you really quickly. You know, they had a third big chance. Moreno probably should score. It's great by Leno. I'm glad we started him. I think it was the right call, and I think he did roughly what he needed to do in this game. But when Francis Coughlin is playing blind passes into the penalty area around your center back, you may have a problem with your center back. I thought Marie got exposed here. I mean, do you think that Mikel Arteta has to have a big rethink of his center back pairing? I just don't know how we've arrived at a point this season on the balance of all the evidence, feeling that this is the pairing he should pick.
I do actually think Holding and Marie have been pretty decent, to be honest.
Decent, but is it enough? I mean, is the samples, are we narrowing our sample sizes on player evaluation to reduce it to absurdity?
Possibly, yeah. I read an interesting article by a guy called Mark Thompson, actually, writes some really good stuff.
Yep.
And he wrote a good piece on Arteta, and he was actually, you know, talking about like the difficulty in judging Arteta and things like that. And he said he'd looked at Arteta's reign and said, what I think I'm going to do is chop it up into 2 month increments, because that gives you roughly 10 games or so, probably a bit more. But that seems like a good sample size. And if I chop, and he just went through and said, if I chop up Arteta's reign into 2 month increments, I've got, you know, good twice, bad four times, indifferent three times, you know, that kind of thing. And so it is quite possible. It isn't a big enough sample size to say that they're brilliant. I'm not sure we have a big enough sample size with any of our back fours, though. I think that's the thing. Like, we don't have a big enough sample size with Holding and Gabriel either, or Luiz and Gabriel, because we've chopped and changed quite a lot. And initially, I thought that was going to be about horses for courses and things like that. But and to be honest, I think before this game, I was not worried at all about the idea of Marie playing ahead of Gabriel. I did think that was probably earned on balance. I do take what you're saying, the kind of, and also, you know, Gabriel's younger and he's the guy we're really invested in. He's the one we really put the money down for. He's 5 years younger than Pablo Marie. Like, let's just get him playing in these games now. And I am sympathetic to that argument. Like, I don't massively sweat it. Between who is on the team sheet, between Marie and Gabriel. I do think this is a kind of a black mark on Marie. And look, like, not every game needs to be a referendum on a player. Like, sometimes you just have a bad game, or sometimes you're just in bad form, and we always seek to explain that, and sometimes there isn't a good explanation. I do wonder, though, if this is where Marie... maybe like just a lack of experience in these games. I mean, he played some big games for Flamengo, but he played them in a really dominant team. So I'm not sure it's quite the same thing. I'm not sure if in his career he's been in like this, you know, really this type of game that often. And granted, probably Gabriel hasn't either, but he's 22. And so if we get him playing in these games now, the idea is that in 2-3 years, we're playing in these games again, he'll have them under his belt. So I think personally, I would say in hindsight, it definitely didn't work. And I'm sure if Arteta could go back, he'd make that change. I wasn't massively worried about it at the start. I do think that without Luiz, you've kind of got to play Holding. And then I think there's a cigarette paper between Mari and Gabriel at the moment. So I don't actually have an enormous problem with that. I guess what I'd say is that where Mari is usually very good is, I think Mari probably makes more sense next to Tierney, because Mari's very good at covering, like, for a very attacking left back. That's what he did at Flamengo. He played Felipe Luis there. He's very good at covering that space when, you know, someone like Tierney bombs forward. not so sure. And obviously that's not what Xhaka's doing. And we saw what happened with the first goal, right? Like, it's not because Xhaka's up the pitch. I'm sure if Xhaka had been caught up the pitch, I reckon Mari probably comes over and tries to deal with that. Mm. But when he's got Xhaka right next to him and Ceballos on top of him, he kind of just shrinks away. And we have seen that before. That was it, that Leicester goal, where they just kind of run in a straight line and he just keeps pedaling backwards. So we have seen that from him before, to be fair.
Yeah. I don't want to push this topic too far. And I agree with a lot of what you've said, because I think player evaluation is the manager's job, by the way. Like, it's not a podcaster's job to say, pick the better player, because he's going to say, well, I'm picking the player I think is better in this situation just because you disagree. He's right. He has that right. I worry a little bit about systems and player evaluation and selection being so fluid. I mean, look, none of us want Willian playing, but the extent to which Willian felt like a player he thought he had to have on the pitch to suddenly being a player that has no role, well, barring the obvious and important 94th minute substitution for him and Elneny, we'll get to all that. We're going to get to substitutions, how he changed the game and how he didn't change the game. And that's going to start with the Ceballos conversation. So before we have that Ceballos conversation, let me just say this. You know that we are our big Manscaped friends here, but for today, I want to tell you about Candid Company. That's Candid Co., candidco.com. Candid Co. is a teeth aligner treatment. This is really, really good technology, and it's interesting because I remember I wanted to get my teeth straightened a few years back. I went to a dentist office, and they proposed these clear aligners for me, and the price was so many thousands of dollars that I did not particularly want to spend at that time. And so I passed on it, but it was something I always wanted to do. Well, you can do that now. If you're unhappy with your smile or if you just want your teeth straightened, thousands of people have used Candid, the clear, comfortable, removable, and practically invisible aligners to help straighten their teeth. And now they love their smile. Just like, well, let's tell you what Sharon thinks. Sharon from Pittsburgh said, I wore braces as a teenager. Flash forward 30 years, I had crowding at the bottom. One of my teeth actually stuck out. That's when I made the decision to move forward with Candid, and I got my teeth straight. I think Sharon is kind of like me, right? I had braces. I wore them forever. They were super expensive, and sure enough, I needed them to be readjusted. And this is the kind of technology that does it. What's really neat, though, is there are companies that do this, and they do it in partnership with general dentists. Candid works with an actual orthodontist, people who are experts in tooth movement. So you have the same quality of care you get from an in-office orthodontist, but you get it from home. You don't have to actually go in. It's from the comfort and convenience of your own home. So the average treatment's just less than 6 months. It's thousands of dollars less than an in-office service. So you can become your best use. Start straightening your teeth today. Right now, you can save $75 on Candid Starter Kit. Go to candidco.com/vision and use code VISION. That's candidco, C-O, candidco.com/vision, code VISION. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Save $75 on your starter kit. CandidCo.com/vision, code VISION. Do it now. Clive, enough?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
All right.
Good. I'm thinking about center backs.
You're thinking about center backs. That's fine. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Some days we fix your privates. Some days we fix your teeth. We're going to get it all sorted out here one way or another. Okay. So let's talk about Ceballos, though. Look, he didn't have a good game. He didn't have a good game. He had a lot of responsibility. He played poorly, however you want to say it. Maybe he shouldn't have even been picked in the first place, but he was picked and he's out there. He gets a yellow card because he can't run. Fine. He gets another warning. You have the combination of he's playing badly and he's on a warning and it's halftime and you're down 2-0. There's so many opportunities to change it. Bring in Cedric, move Shaq up the pitch, get Ceballos off, protect yourself. The second half starts. He's on that warning. He makes a foul. You got to know what's going. And he said he spoke to him at halftime. Don't get sent off. He even said after the match, I wanted to take him off. I was getting Martinelli ready, but come on. Between that last warning foul and the sending off, I think there's 11 minutes. Clive, maybe I'm coming into a moment with my opinions of Arteta that I'm being overly harsh on him. I don't see any way Arteta can squirm out of not taking Ceballos off. This for me is a red card. You will rarely see a red card as clearly on the manager in my view as this one. So do you want to temper that, be a little more circumspect, or are you on board with me being pretty critical of Arteta in this case?
Yeah, he got that. I think the whole of the Arsenal watching world would agree with you on that one, Elliot. I think there is no debate. There is no debate. We watch the game through with fear because we're forced to in these times. And we look at all these weaknesses and they become really apparent in the biggest of moments. There are games and then there are games. And this is a game where you don't mess about. You just don't do it. You know, and it was coming. It doesn't even, you know how these work. We got a penalty from nothing, didn't we? You don't have to do anything to get sent off or to get a card. You just don't have to. So if you're not in control of that variable, then you mitigate risk. Simple as that. There's not, you are the manager, you are the coach, and these blokes, I'm telling you now, you know, I'm as he's walking off at half time, Steve Round and the Albert Stuckenberg, whatever his name is, they need to be in his ear saying, by the way, do you want me to warm up a sub?
But I mean, so he knew. He said, I talked to him not to get sent off at halftime. We were ready.
No, they need
to be pushier. I will be
in his ear.
Got it.
Going, I'll be going, right, he's coming off. Right, it's not even a debate. He's coming off. And you just get someone ready immediately. This is a European semi-final, and we are fighting for 80 million quid extra revenue. You don't mess about with a loan player that's not even ours. Get him off the pitch. You need something else. You've been given evidence. I don't blame Tobias for this. He has these days. He's a player that seems to, when he has a good day, you can't stop him. He seems to be so effervescent. He pops the ball around. If the game suits him, he's a decent player. When the game doesn't suit him, it's so obvious. It is like, oh my God, this is not his day. And the game shape, the distances, it's not his day. We can't change it. We haven't got the personnel to change it. So we have to change the player. It is that simple. If it's 30 minutes, because he has such weaknesses, you can't miss him. He's also got major strengths. So I'm not going to dismiss the player. On this day, I thought he was let down. I felt he wasn't coached correctly to where to stand. I thought he overpressed. Whether he was told to overpress, I'm not sure. I thought he was let down, overexposed. But by the way, this has happened before. His limitations are clear. And on the day of the game, I sort of woke up to do my little internet searches on News Now. And it was Tobias saying, by the way, I don't think the English league suits me, blah, blah, blah. Basically saying he's on his way. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, you're not playing then. And then he plays. So it's like, there have been players in recent history that have said a few things in interviews we don't see for a little while. You know what I mean? But for some reason, this guy plays. And I'm not surprised. The weakness of Arteta and the weakness of Tobias are clear to all of us. They've got strengths, both of them have. But on this day, their weaknesses were far bigger than their strengths. And we know what Arteta's weaknesses are, and we know what Tobias' weaknesses are. You put the two together, and we end up with a red card, and very lucky to get out of jail.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just ask you quickly, Tim. I'm not particularly fussed about it. For you, is it a sending off?
I'll say what I said about the penalty last night. It's a 2021 European competition red card. I have a problem. I'd say this about the VAR red card as well. I think red cards should be for being like a real bastard. I think you should it should take some effort to get sent off, like violent conduct or utterly like you shouldn't get sent off for three fouls. I don't think unless they're egregious.
He was a picky, officious referee. Yep. So you know what you're up against. You know what? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, how do you drive when there's a police car behind you? Do you drive your normal way? 5 miles over the speed limit, 10 miles over the speed limit? No, you white knuckle it on the wheel going 5 miles under the speed limit because you know you don't want to tempt fate. This was massively tempting fate.
Yeah, it really was. And do you know what? The thing is, for me, it's not just, like, players get booked all the time, right? You can't drag off every player that's going to get booked. I would say this is slightly different, because of the job we had Ceballos doing, chasing back towards his own goal against, like, fast wingers and plodding fullbacks, to be fair. And when you get a yellow card, sometimes like the chronology of your fouls matters as well. Like, because his first yellow card is like really egregious, you know, just like kicking the guy's legs away, which I think he had to do, and I'm glad he did it because I think we were in trouble. But when that's like your first yellow card, I don't think your second yellow card is that far away, if you know what I mean.
I got another instinct about that too. As we get our first baby involvement of the podcast, which is Tim. Like, here's something I really believe about referees: when you're on a yellow, and then you make another foul that's really should probably be a yellow, but the ref doesn't show it, you can't make any other foul. You know what I mean?
So like, you're done.
I thought the warning foul would have been a yellow if it wasn't his second. You know what I mean? I think he would have gotten a yellow card for the warning foul. So I think the referee's like, you know what? I've let you off from your second yellow. You make another foul, you're gone. And I feel the manager has to read that, and the player has to read that, to be fair. So while the actual second yellow is harsh, I think he gets it because the one he got away with probably should have been a second yellow. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's the accumulation of it that matters in this scenario. But for me, it's not just that he was on a yellow card and skate, because he wasn't really skating on very thin ice at half time. That first foul happens right at the beginning of the second half. The problem for me, where I have the problem, Elliot, is that he was playing crap.
That's it. Tim, let's say he had no yellow. We'd still want him off at halftime, right?
And that gave the manager the excuse to take him off. Like, that's all the excuse. He doesn't have to say, "I think you're playing crap." If he doesn't want to, he can just say, "Do you know what?
I'm
this is a really
system.
Picky ref. You're on a yellow card. I'm changing things. You know, someone has to go off. You're on a yellow, so I'm picking you. Sorry."
And oh, by the way, you don't play for our club, and you just said you want to go to Real Betis this week. So fuck you.
Exactly. So who are we protecting anyway? But even if he really wants to do that, it just gave him the perfect excuse to change things. And that's what annoyed me when I sent the tweet at halftime saying, you know, the yellow card gives him the perfect excuse. It wasn't necessarily because I was worried about him being sent off. It was because I thought he was playing rubbish and that he needed to be replaced.
Yeah. And
on the corner goal? Mm-hmm. We're in the right-hand corner. Chambers, there's a little bit of movement. Goes to Partey. He flicks it inside to Ceballos, and Ceballos miscontrols it. And it's one of those things where you're under a bit of pressure. If you can play out, you're out to the left wing and we're off and running, much like they did to us on the first goal. All right, so he miscontrolled it. They get the corner. We're 2-0 down. And I'm thinking from that moment on, I've got the ump. Because that's the sort of stuff that it's really hurting us. That sloppiness, that lack of ball retention. If you're not a good runner, then be really good on the ball. You know what I mean? Cesc Fabregas wasn't a great runner, but he's really good on the ball. And we forgave the fact he couldn't run because he ran the team because he was good on the ball. I'm not seeing enough of the other stuff justifying playing in this team, you know? So it's a concern. I don't want to stay too long on him. No. It's an obvious issue, and we've got too many non-runners in our team and have done for years. We have to hide them.
You're 2-0 down in a European semifinal, and you've got a guy playing crap and he's on a yellow. You can't wait to 63 minutes to change it? You can't. Arteta is lax with long stretches of European Cup ties. And I think eventually it's going to bite him. And here it did. And hopefully not in a way that sees us crash out, although it certainly could. I don't understand how we had, I mean, until he makes the 94th minute subs of Elneny and Willian, which is the most hilarious, pointless thing I've ever seen, he made two subs in this game. It's a game that needed to be changed. And he was right. And the idea that Aubameyang is only fit enough for 6 minutes, there's no fitness level where you can only play 6 minutes. There's no way the physios said he's got 6 minutes in him. That's not a thing. We'll get to a few positives because I think Pepe and Saka deserve a little bit of credit here. I thought they showed a lot of personality to try to sort of drag us through this. But Clive, I think maybe the biggest positive, the person who deserves credit, even more than Saka and Pepe, and I have to admit, it tastes like vinegar in my mouth to praise him, but I'm going to, and I hope you will as well. I think huge credit deserved for Unai Emery helping us get back into this tie. I don't know if it's because he still has a deep love and affection for Arsenal.
And Coquelin.
And Francis Coquelin. Yeah, they conspired to... Well, to be fair, Coquelin almost pulled us apart and gave him their third goal. But
to be honest, I couldn't see Coquelin when he came on. I never saw him touch the ball.
Well, he almost created a third goal. Let's remember, no look pass between Marie and Holding into Moreno.
I wasn't looking. I was too worried about our player.
Clive, that halftime substitution is... I mean, chef's kiss, hang it in the Louvre, Unai Emery substitution. You've got us up against the wall. We look shaken, and you take off your striker for a tackly midfielder. It's Unai Emery all over, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? You know, I didn't disrespect Unai when he was in charge, and I know you guys pointed this out a lot before I recognized it. So, you know, fair play. And but you were bang on about him, and he basically. He snatched this one away from himself. He had it there in his hands and he found a way not to. I think the striker may have had an injury, but even so, you send a message when Coquelin comes on to everybody. You're there, you're 2-0 down as an Arsenal player. Coquelin comes on, you're thinking they're going to go into a 4-5-1. Okay, boys, we're going to have the ball. Let's go. Do you know what I mean? Literally, that's it. That's what it says. If it puts another striker on, you're thinking more of the same. We've got to wrestle this game from them. No, and it's just, he did this. He gave us the territory against City PSG the night before. It was a great game to watch. And City were struggling. And I'm looking at their false nine wondering, what are you doing? You know, you need a striker. You need to get back into this game. And they were struggling. I thought City got two good goals, setting them. But, you know, the first goals were a little bit fortunate and the second goal was fantastic. But what they do really well is that after half time, City said, okay, we're being boshed here. We've been pushed around. We're being controlled. They went long for the first 5 minutes of the second half, pushed PSG back and pressed them in. But they had to do it. And PSG thought, you know what? We've got Neymar. We've got Mbappe. We've got Di Maria. Eventually, we'll get out. They didn't get out because City suffocated them. I felt City had to do that. They had to do that. They had to force themselves onto PSG. We didn't have to do anything. Emery gave it to us. And we thought we can get going now. And you can't do that. He could be in a European Cup final today or European Europa League final. He could be that guy. And he didn't. And we only need a 1-0 win and this is over, right? So I can see now, Elliot, why you were so infuriated about Unai Emery. And he's done this to them. And if they don't get through, he's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, I am never going to apologize for my Unai Emery opinions because I think they were pretty darn good from Unai Emery pod number one right on through with the exception of the few moments where maybe I wavered and thought he was half decent. The thing I will say, look, there is no credit deserved for getting to the semifinal of the Europa League. Mikel Arteta gets no credit from me. This is where the competition starts. If you are a club of our stature and you don't get to the semifinal of the Europa League, you've failed. You didn't succeed by getting to the Europa League semifinal. You met the par expectation. Chelsea gets in this competition, they win it. Nothing. Right to the final, win it. United, same. Right to the final, win it. All right, we're not Chelsea United, fine. But this is not a hard... I mean, Arsene Wenger walked us to the semifinal. We played a Champions League caliber, a high-end Champions League caliber team in Atletico Madrid, and Koscielny threw it away for us. Unai Emery, not any good, walks us to the final, got us past Napoli. Arteta has to get us to the final. This is where the competition starts, as far as I'm concerned, for Arsenal. Got to give credit to, I got to give credit to Andrew Allen for the tweet of the night about this. By the way, he says you can tell both teams have an Arsenal manager in charge, which is an excellent comment. But yeah, Tim, I think the Unai Emery thing did help us, but there was still work to be done. And if we want to give some credit. The credit goes to Saka and Pepe, who really did try to use individual skill to bail out a system that wasn't working. Saka ultimately getting it done. Look, the penalty is as stonewall as you will see. I was worried that his leg might need to be operated on the pitch. I didn't know if the ankle had become detached. No, I'm kidding. I mean, look, if that's a Spurs penalty, I'm calling it a dive. It's not a Spurs penalty. It's an Arsenal penalty. So I'm calling it soft. I don't care. The point is we got it. And we got Capu sent off, both for the same reasons. A young player in a team that's misfiring, taking it on himself to try to make things happen. And I think both Pepe and Saka did that, and they both deserve credit. But do you want to start with Saka?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think he just sees both those situations coming a mile off, particularly the first one where there's no striker and he just thinks, right, I'm going through all of you. One of you is going to hang out a leg. Oh, no, you haven't hung out a leg. Then I'm hanging out a leg. And, you know, look, that it is simulation, if not an out and out dive. But, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, quite frankly. And my attitude towards simulation and all of that, I just don't really care about it. Possibly from watching a lot of South American football, where the attitude of supporters is they don't give a shit about it. and I think that's probably a good way to be. Otherwise, you just really upset yourself. And with the red card as well, I think he just sees that tackle coming a mile off, just like, because if you actually look back at it again, the way he moves the ball, it's not going anywhere. Like, he sees the tackle coming and he's like, right, I'm just going to make sure the ball gets out of the way so that he doesn't take it and that he gets, I'm not, you know, I can't say for sure that he knew that Kapu was on a yellow card in that particular moment, but it was, you're going to get a yellow card for this. And yeah, just his consistent bravery in those situations, you know, and he gets hit a lot. But like, much like Jack Grealish, he's not afraid to get hit. Mm. And that's a real, I mean, I say that's a real positive. I mean, it wasn't a positive for Jack Wilshere. Perhaps let's not go there. But do you know what I mean? Like, if you can, to quote that like really contrived Rocky quote, like, what was it he says in like the last Rocky movie? It's something like, it's not about how hard. I can't remember. He says something like, it's not about how, like, getting knocked down. It's about getting up afterwards. And that's kind of the thing with Saka. And yeah, they were like individual moments that were separate from the system. On Pepe, the big tragedy of this night from an attacking point of view is not Smith Rowe not quite doing it as a false nine, etc., etc. The tragedy is we did not get Pepe on Foyth nearly enough. And I was just about to tweet and I didn't because the goal got in the way. But I was going to tweet, like, because I think Pepe had already gone past Foyth once in maybe the opening minute or two. And I was literally going to tweet, get Pepe on Foyth, get Pepe on Foyth, get Pepe on Foyth, until my characters ran out, because I was thinking that that's where it's going to come. And obviously, like, Pepe nearly got a penalty as well in quite similar circumstances. And that for me is where, like, the real culpability is attacking wise. That was it Jess who said before the game that Villarreal, their right hand side is their strong point and their weak point, i.e. that they have a brilliant right winger but an awful right back. And for me, it was just that we just did not work the ball to Pepe enough to isolate him there, because every time he was there, I just thought he had Juan Foyth on toast, which is, to be fair, that's a low bar to clear. But it was just so obvious, and it was just such a shame we just couldn't create that situation more, that we couldn't work the ball over onto that side a bit more. So yeah, like you say, on a night where the system didn't work, and I suppose ironically for an Arteta team where he kind of instinctively doesn't seem to trust the more instinctive, inspirational, off the cuff players, that's exactly the play that got us back in this tie, and that's why he's got to trust that sort of attacking play just a little bit more. I'm not saying go full Wenger, you know, freestyle jazz or anything like that, but just having just that one or two players in the front three who will do that, just trust them to do that, because they will get you goals. They might frustrate you, they might give the ball away, etc., etc., and it might upset your pretty triangles and, you know, your pass completion rate, but it will get you goals. And so I hope that that's a lesson among many lessons I think Arteta should take from this. And I guess, you know, to wrap that thought up, we've spoken before about one of the things about having a novice manager is you've got to accept their learning on the job, and you have. So let's see that Arteta's learned. That's the kicker. Has he learned from this? And I hope that Pepe and Saka showed him something to learn from.
Yeah, Yeah, well said. Clive, rather than me inserting my inane nonsense in between you and you and Tim praising some players, since it's always good to have some positivity on the pod, why don't you just continue the theme there?
Yeah, I listened to what Tim was saying, and we all like these two players, and we know we need them to do their thing to get us where we need to get to. And they've become increasingly, well, Saka can't become more influential, but I think Pepe's really becoming increasingly influential. And he's starting to believe in himself. His teammates are believing in him. And I think he looked like a team player last night, a real strong team player. He could see his mates under stress. He was working backwards. Then he was getting on the ball. Secondary movements were excellent. He really looked good on the ball. I thought he had an excellent game. And I think, and to sort of add a bit of detail to what Tim was saying about not getting the ball to him. Again, I'm afraid the link man is Ceballos in that little triangle there, isn't it? It's Saka, Ceballos, and it's out to Pepe. And he kept coming in and switching it out to the right side when the real problem was behind you, mate. Just go left foot, can you? Because Pepe's got this guy. And you just sort of keep feeding him. But he kept going out wide, then coming back into space where he's come from, into central areas, and switching it to Chambers, who wasn't confident on the night, and then was dropping it back to holding, back to keeper, boom. You see what I mean? It's just little details. You put Shaka in that role, it's fizzing out to Pepe, and we're in business. You know, we're really in business. I did feel the build-up was massively underpowered. And on the other side, again, let's not mess about, right? We're giving Ceballos a load of stick, but Odegaard was not great. He did not offer connections to Saka. So what we were doing, Saka was having to do it all himself. Had to go distance to him from fullback, and when he was receiving it, he was crowded with twos and threes, and there was no wall pass for him. Odegaard wasn't there. He wasn't as effective as he normally is, and he's a player that I really have liked, but he was invisible. Then he got Smith Rowe being misused. We weren't getting those connections. We weren't getting them, and those two players did really well, but they did it despite the system. They did it despite, they had no connections. They were doing it off bits and pieces. And now Tim's right. We could have really took more advantage of that on another day. And I hope we've learned the lesson for the Emirates on Thursday.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with going too doomy and sticking the boot in too much on this podcast is that this isn't over. And, you know, there's a lot of people, myself included, that started to really lose it with Arteta specifically during this game. And I don't know how many times you need to be taught that halftime of the first leg of a two-legged European tie is where takes go to die. Like, that is the best place to embarrass yourself with takes, but I just never learned that lesson, and I will never learn that lesson. Tim, as we wrap up, can he just learn to use subs? Please, like, I mean, the not doing the Ceballos thing, fine. He brings on Martinelli, and he just sits on his hands. He's used two subs up until the 94th minute. He brings on Aubameyang in 86 minutes. Like, what are we doing? And of course,
yeah.
Partey, who looks like a totally different, not really good when Ceballos is on, looks like a totally different player when Ceballos is off, drives the ball forward, plays a beautiful pass between the center backs into Aubameyang, who makes the perfect center forward run, controls it sensationally with a little pirouette, and gets a shot off despite slipping, which everyone was doing on the night. I mean, Aubameyang needs to start the next leg if he can, but what are we doing? I mean, what is the 86-minute sub? What are the 94th-minute subs? Like, for a guy who's so smart and understands football so well, it can't be this hard to understand. And I say understand is probably the wrong word, but to improve at using your substitutions in a 5-sub-rule tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is as well for him, this is going to become a thing now, a bit like the whole Pep overthinking thing, which I think, or the Jose Mourinho 3-season thing, which, like, I think if you actually dig down into those, I don't think they're that true. Or at least, because what happens, like, every time Pep loses a game, now it's like, oh, he's overthought it. And actually, I don't think it is. And this Mourinho 3-season thing, I think it's really only happened once. And everyone's trying to retrofit that narrative because they like it so much and it's so neat and tidy. That this is going to become Arteta's thing. And the way, if he's not careful, and the way that this happens is first the fans of the club notice it, because obviously they're very absorbed by the games and they watch them all and they know the detail. But soon after, everyone else cottons onto it and it goes into the wider consciousness. I think we've probably hit that point with Arteta now where, you know, the Arsenal fans see it and talk about it so much that everyone's going to start talking about it now. And I think that Arteta's reputation really matters to him. I think he's going to start getting asked about this in press conferences. And I think that now people will start looking like I think he completely deserves exactly that criticism for this game. What's going to start happening now is it's going to be a criticism for every game, regardless of whether it's true or not. Mm. So every time there hasn't been a sub by the 55th minute, everyone's going to go, "Oh, fucking Arteta, not making subs." Because, like, I've been to enough games.
Who would do a thing like that, Tim? Who do we know that might? Come on. No one would do that.
I'm thinking, like, inside the stadiums, Clive will know this. What is the first thing people shout? Like, the minute you get into the second half, if someone misplaces a pass, get him off, sub him. It does become an obsession quickly. That is a problem, I think, that Arteta's creating for himself, that this is going to become part of his image. And regardless of whether it's actually true or not, this cat of nine tails is going to come out to whip him a few times. So, he needs to get a handle on this for sure, I think. But one thing I'd like to thank him for is very few people agree with my Wenger was actually very good at subs take. And the longer Arteta goes on with this, the better, the more acceptable I think that take becomes for people. Mm. So from my own reputational branding point of view, it's probably working out quite well. Less so for Arteta. He needs to... I think there's an element of pride to this, and I think there's an element of pride to him not having having that voice on the coaching staff that's really a challenger or someone who's been there and done that, and I think that might be about pride as well, because he's trying to make his way in management, and I think he's concerned about his reputation. He likes this reputation as the bright young thing in coaching, and I think he wants to cultivate that. And he should fix the substitutions thing, because that's good for Arsenal, and it's good practice. But I do think that he is trying to cultivate a reputation, and this will follow him. And the thing is about that as well is when this job is gone, that will be the black mark on when everyone else is looking for a manager. And in the boardrooms, they say, "What about Arteta?" Someone's going to say, "Yeah, shit at substitutions, though." Like, that stuff follows you around. So he needs to sort it out both for himself and for Arsenal.
Yeah. And I mean, please, Clive.
No, I was just saying, yeah, absolutely. I was just sitting there thinking as Tim talked, it gets me thinking, right? So, like, what's happened over the last couple of weeks? You know, the last time we felt this way, it's probably the first leg against Slavia. I think we were really disappointed how we threw that away, weren't we? I think this Europa League is huge to us as fans, and we're really looking at it. And all the ESL stuff has made us all look at the club in a slightly different way. And we're just looking really closely. And the importance of these games seem to be running away with themselves, running away in my mind anyway. I think I wasn't thinking we're going to win the Europa League at the start of the season. Now I'm thinking we really have to. So it feels like there's a different expectation all of a sudden. You know, when Arteta came, you know, I was thinking 3 to 5 year project coach. I'm not thinking project coach when Tobias is running back through quicksand. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So even I flip, my emotions are flipping. I'm not thinking, next transfer window, and I can see obvious mistakes not being addressed. Do you see what I mean? And I think a lot of people are going through that at the moment. Some people on the edge, some people jumped off the edge. We can't help it. That's the way people are, and that's it. And I'm just telling you what I'm going through. Basically, this is more important than I'm giving myself credit for. And it is too important. It's become really important. Mm. And these sort of junior mistakes, they're not going to be tolerated by people far less patient than I am. They're just not going to have it. And he needs to shape up. He does. Regardless of the fact there may be a bigger plan there. Because no one trusts plans anymore. Because the plan was revealed last weekend, you know, a couple of weekends ago. We saw your plan. So this project you've got going, let's see what it looks like, shall we? Is he part of this? everyone's looking at the club, waiting for the next thing to really make their confirm their opinions. And so we can't be messing about with substitutions. We can't mess about with team selections. I know some of that's injury-related, and we know we can pick our strongest team and be much better. But I do think the light is shining, and it's a byproduct of a lack of experience and trust from the top right the way down. And the only thing we can evidence to confirm our opinions is what we see on the Thursday night games that really count. And the Thursday night game this week did not help. However, I felt the same way after the first leg. And the second leg, to your point, Elliot, against Slavia was one of the best moments of the season so far. That could easily happen, although I don't feel 100% confident.
Yeah, look, I still think that the substitution issue is also tied into the fact that the system is so muddled. Like, I'm not trying to say football is the most simple, and I want to avoid hypocrisy here, not that that's my usual brand, but like, I felt that Arsene Wenger didn't do tactics. I mean, my opinion was not that simplistic, come on. But you know what I mean? Like, I think I felt that there were tactical innovations happening in the game and that his football still lacked some of the structure and tactical nuance that we were seeing develop in the game. Arteta's still doing this calculus thing. We said weeks ago, you know, sometimes it should be arithmetic, not calculus. And I just think that he is a guy who wants to show his stuff, show his insight, prove his intellect. He wants it to be calculus. He wants midfielders at left back in, you know, tilted 4-3-3, 3-3-4, 4-2-4 formations where the left back becomes a center back in a three and build up, but drops into left back out of the off the ball. And the number nine isn't a nine at all. He drops into midfield in the build up, but then he goes to connect with the front line. And like, I got a problem with calculus. You know what it is? No one understands calculus. Tim, do you understand calculus?
Absolutely not.
Clive, do you understand calculus?
What is it?
No one understands calculus, least of all our players. Why would you look at these players and think they understand calculus? No one understands calculus, so stop it. Make it arithmetic. My six-year-old understands arithmetic, and that makes me feel smart because I do too, so do arithmetic. 4-2-3-1, Shaq is a midfielder. Play him there. Cedric's not great, but he is a left back. Hector Bellerin's not great right now, but he is a right back. Pick your center backs that you've been using most of the season. Pick your two best midfielders in center midfield. Put your number 10 from Real Madrid in between the lines. Play your really tricky wingers on either side and use your golden boot striker. That seems pretty easy. And you could say, look, football's not that simple. Football is more complex than that. And I agree that football can be more complex than that. But when you see Pep Guardiola doing what he's doing, he's had years to work on it. He's had a decade of being the best manager in all of football to figure it out. He's had £1 billion of money spent to bring in players who can do it. Granit Xhaka is not Cancelo. I mean, I love Granit Xhaka. I don't love Granit Xhaka, but he's not Cancelo. You know, I mean, none of these guys are the City players. So for this talent, for this team, for the pieces that we have, this imbalanced team, no one understands calculus. And the players didn't. And, you know, Clive, you kind of picked on me a little bit in the instant reaction, but not picked on me, but you called me out on this, which is right. I said this was a new system for a European semifinal. And you're like, well, it is a false nine. You're right. It's not a totally new system. It is a small tweak again on a system we've been using for about 4 weeks into a European semifinal with a selection of players that is once again a change from what we've done. And I just think that is calculus thinking for an arithmetic squad, and it doesn't work. And he was slow to change it. He got caught out by the Ceballos thing. What I will say is we are in the tie. So Clive, how do we balance the frustration we feel right now? And this will be it. We'll get out of here. How do you balance the frustration we feel? The sense that our manager was really teetering there with the fact that we're starting to get fit again. We don't have to concentrate on the weekend game, which is a luxury we've created by being 10th. We did get an away goal. They weren't very good. They lose Etienne Capoue, who Spanish media apparently thought was brilliant. And we get a go at him at the Emirates. I mean, how do you balance the frustration we have with the fact that there are some things that should absolutely leave us to feel okay, not great, but okay about the second leg?
Yeah, we don't need much to go for us, do we? And it's a tough one, right? Again, it comes back to the frustration that we all feel. I feel, in the end, some of this is, well, obviously we've really focused on Arteta today, and quite rightly. And some of the players that we're talking about that could come in and play, they're not screaming to the rooftop to say they're that much better than the players that were playing. Do you know what I mean? There's a decent debate on who the best right back is. There is. We can have that debate. Is it between Mari and Gabriel? You know what? Mari didn't play well last night, but Gabriel's had a couple of dodgy games. I think Gabriel's a better player over time. But right now, Gabriel's not saying, give me that shirt. Do you see what I mean? And there's too much of that. There's too many paper-thin decisions. And there's too much mediocre quality, I'm afraid, that allows this to happen. There is nothing. Okay, if Bamiyang's fit, he plays. We know that. If Lacazette's fit and the way he was playing in form, he probably plays. So there's a few people that Saka always plays. There's a few that Tierney would play. There's a few core people that say, I play. But it's not enough to make the decisions absolute. And that's the problem. We've ended up with a level of mediocrity that we have to coach way out of. And if someone out-coaches us, we haven't got the ability to react and solve the problem. And we were lucky last night. We're in this game. And a 1-0 win at home is all we need.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I mean, 1-0 to the Arsenal, Clive. What else could it be?
1-0 is all we need. And it's over, right? And we are fantastic at keeping clean sheets at home. So what are you worried about?
Nothing. No, I got nothing to worry about. I will say this. I mean, I think some of the problem with selection and your point that no one's demanding the shirt, it is a whipsaw situation that can be created by the manager to some extent. I used to get frustrated with Arsene Wenger that I felt there weren't often enough consequences for poor performances. But I think in Arteta's case, it's been a bit of a whipsaw season for some of these players, seeing themselves be in favor and out of favor. And I think there's something to be said for knowing the shirt is yours and that one bad performance doesn't take it away from you. And as fans, I think at times we want to see players be held accountable for a bad performance. Absolutely. There should be accountability. But I think you need some players that know, I don't have anyone better than you. Go play your way into some form. Go play with confidence that the shirt is yours. Because otherwise, you wind up having to reach for players who just probably aren't good enough. And I don't think that that's the solution either. We'll see what he does. I mean, the one thing I'll say is I really do get Slavia Prague vibes off this in the sense that we felt he got it wrong with the system against Slavia Prague. We felt that he got bailed out with a result that left us in the tie, admittedly more in the tie than this result. And he did change it, and he did fix the mistakes he made in the first leg, and he battered them in the second. Villarreal aren't so good that we can't do the same thing if he gets it right. So, Tim, I mean, to you as we say goodbye here, do you see the similarities? Do you see a situation where he doesn't have Ceballos to pick? He's probably going to learn the lesson about Shaka needing to be in midfield. Is Arteta almost handed a very straightforward blueprint for how to at least theoretically, properly, I say somewhat arrogantly, I guess, approach the second leg here?
Yeah, absolutely. And he should have a Aubameyang fit. To start that one, you'd imagine that Lacazette will be fit enough for the bench, so at the very least those two can share the game, so we shouldn't have this kind of the overthinking the striker or lack thereof. Who knows if Tierney will be available, even if he's able to be on the bench, that, you know, that's a good sub to bring on in the 88th minute. Basically, there were no perfect answers with this team selection for this game. Like, we still wouldn't have been optimum with Cedric at left back or Martinelli up front. I still think Martinelli up front would have been better because he takes shots and shots are quite important if you want to score goals. At least one of those problems is going to be solved in the second leg. He's probably going to have David Luiz back as well. He's saved those players, and probably rightfully so, so that they're around for the second leg. So I think we can be a different beast with David Luiz, Aubameyang, Lacazette on the bench, Tierney able to play hopefully some part. And as you point out, no Ceballos, although, you know, he could play on any there. But I mean, even then, like, I tend to think Elneny is less likely to have a nightmare game. He'll have a nothing game. So I do think that, like, a lot of the pillars will potentially be back in place. Ødegaard, Clive's right, he was rubbish, but I don't think he's fit. So maybe if he plays, I don't know, 20-30 minutes against Newcastle to get his eye in a little bit, then we're talking. Then we've got options. And yeah, some of the pillars that we were really missing that probably forced a little bit of this, if you want to call it overthinking in the first place, You know, that I guess I would separate this from that Man City game, for example, where Arteta started Willian at false nine, even though everyone was available. On this occasion, he was looking for another solution because players weren't available. So it's a gift horse for him to look in the mouth for the second leg, definitely.
Yeah, and another gift horse, sort of like the Slavia Prague game. The result from the first leg makes it very clear what we need, right? I mean, it's not like we got a 0-0 and there, you know, or a 1-1 and you're kind of like, well, do we sit on it? Do we try to get 0-0 and just go through on a way? Like, we have to go win. We have to go beat them. You know, now you could say, well, 3-2, we're out, whatever. But the real gift horse we have here is Unai Emery is coaching Villarreal. And we know he's going to set them up to try to just kill the game and get through 0-0. They are going to be negative. They are going to be passive because no matter the fact that his favorite word in the English language is protagonist, I still don't think anyone showed him a dictionary of what it means. So where there is hope, there is hope that can kill you, or there's the possibility you get through. And look, this was always setting up for us to face Manchester United in the final. And I still think, despite all the evidence, and as mad as I was at Arteta, and as much as I lost the run of myself on Twitter, I will probably be made to look stupid at the end of this second leg, and that is what I am hoping for. So, we live in hope. We have Newcastle at the weekend. Nobody cares about it, but we're still going to do an instant reaction pod after it. Alex Kirkland from the Spanish Football Podcast is up on Patreon, but will be up in the Monday episode, taking the Spanish media perspective on Emery, on Arteta, on Thomas Partey, on the tie itself and what to expect in the second leg. So that'll be coming as part of our Monday episode. And until then, I just hope you have a wonderful weekend and it's not entirely ruined by thoughts of Arsenal. Clive's on Twitter at ClivePFC. Thank you, Clive.
Thank you very much.
Tim's on Twitter at Stilberto. Thank you, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
My name is Elliot Smith. You can and should block me on Twitter. But you know what? It's Twitter blackout this weekend. So you don't have to block me. You won't be hearing from me. In solidarity with everybody hoping to drive the social media companies to eventually do something, please, please do something about the people that can't control themselves and find themselves abusing others on social media. Ridiculous behavior. And we hope it ends. In any event, we love you, and we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Newcastle 0.